to their own bedroom after dinner, leaving the men alone after explaining in French that their location far from the town center was perfect for concealing guests. The handful of Nazi soldiers stationed nearby didn't make the effort to venture out this way. Thomas learned that the youngest pilot was named Norman Wimbley, and that he was 2 months shy of turning 20. He was cocky, but as he related his story of being shot down over southern Belgium and encountering a farmer who was part of an escape line, Thomas could hear the tremor in his voice. The others, Scott Pace and Walter Caldwell, were closer to his own age and had known each other in flight school. Scott had been shot down just outside Paris, and Walter had gone down on the French side of the German border. Like Norman, they had both been assisted by locals with connections to the escape line. Thomas found himself wondering just how extensive the network was. It was amazing to think of all the French and Belgian civilians who were risking their own lives to return men to war.
"Are we really supposed to climb over the mountains?" Norman asked, gesturing out the window into the darkness. "It sounds insane."
"We don't have a choice," Scott pointed out. "It's the only way out of France right now."
"But climbing a mountain," Norman persisted. "Have any of you done that before?"
"No," Walter said. "But do you want to get back into the cockpit or not? If you're uncertain, you may as well stay behind."
"That's not what I'm saying," Norman grumbled. "Only that it'll be hard."
"Life is hard," Walter snapped. "Look," Thomas said after a moment, "there's no doubt this will be difficult, and we can't let down our guard. But we're going to stick together and do what the guides tell us, and we'll make it through."
Scott and Walter nodded, and though Norman muttered something to himself, he eventually shrugged and said, "Fine." The two men who'd picked them up at the station materialized again before dawn, waking the pilots after just a few hours of sleep. They introduced themselves as Florentino and Alessandro, and explained that they had been helping pilots over the mountains to Spain for the past few months.
"Alessandro speaks very little English and also little French," Florentino said. "We both grew up with the Basque language. If you have questions, you ask me."
"How do you propose we make it over the mountain when none of us even has hiking boots?" Norman asked, earning him a hard look from Florentino.
"With courage," Florentino said, "and these."
He held up a burlap bag and dumped the contents on the floor of the bungalow. Inside were several pairs of shoes with soles made from thick rope.
"They will help you with the mountain terrain. Put them on quickly, then we go."
"Espadrilles?" Norman snorted. "Surely you're joking. They're for women."
Florentino glared.
"We've been using these shoes for hundreds of years. The soles mold to you. They help your feet to have air, and they help with the steep inclines. You wear your own shoes if you'd prefer. Just don't expect me to help you when your feet bleed and you fall off a cliff."
5 minutes later, with the strange rope shoes tied on, the pilots were walking quickly toward the mountains, with bags of bread and sausage over their shoulders. Each had also been given a goatskin bag of wine, which was to be consumed sparingly during the crossing.
"We go," Alessandro grunted, the first words he'd said since meeting the pilots.
He pointed to a narrow road that seemed carved out of the steep side of the mountain ahead.
"Follow."
Thomas took a deep breath and fell into line. If this was the way home, he was determined to walk it. 3 days later, the group arrived on the other side of the Spanish border, freezing and exhausted, having waded across the icy Bidasoa River, separating France from Spain. Sometimes, Florentino said, he was able to take pilots over a bridge that spanned the water. But Alessandro had gone ahead on this trip and had returned to report that the bridge was being heavily patrolled by Spanish police. Drenched below the waist and standing in an icy field, Thomas was sure he'd never been so cold in all his life. They had to stick to the shadows for the remainder of their descent, but they made it undetected. In a small town below, Florentino and Alessandro led them to a barn, where they spent the night shivering under thick blankets. They hiked the next day to another town, where they slept in a farmhouse and had a hot meal of potatoes and mutton. And then, on their third day in Spain, Florentino and Alessandro brought them to a road,
where they were picked up by a black car and driven to the coastal town of San Sebastian. From there, a car with Union Jacks drove them to the British Embassy in Madrid, where they were heartily welcomed by the vice consul, given new clothing, and lodged for 2 days. Thomas slept and ate well, but now that his journey was almost over, he found himself thinking not of how close he was to England, but how far he was from Paris. Eventually, the pilots were driven to a port in Seville, where a Norwegian ship was waiting to take them to Gibraltar, on the southern coast of the Iberian Peninsula. There was an RAF base there, and Thomas and the others were given new uniforms before being sent on the final leg of their journey, a flight home to Britain. After a few days of questioning in London, Thomas was sent back to Northolt, where not even the sight of Harry was enough to pull him from the depression he'd slipped into. "But Jerome, my friend," Harry said, pulling him into a bear hug, "do you know the odds that were stacked against you?"
"I had to make it here," Thomas replied. "It's the only way to get back to Paris."
"Back to Paris?" Harry chuckled. "I'd have thought you'd want to stick to this side of the channel for a while. After I was shot down, I was in no great hurry to return to France."
Thomas shook his head.
"It's not France I'm eager to return to."
He left it at that, because he'd received very strict instructions that he was never to talk about any piece of the escape line. It was the one condition under which he'd been allowed to resume fighting over French territory, although he knew many returned pilots were now being redeployed to Africa. That vow of silence included Ruby, he knew. And so he tucked his memories of her away and vowed never to speak of the time he'd spent in her apartment.
What would Harry or the others say anyhow?
But it had been real, he was sure of it. And as he was cleared to return to the skies and he began once again escorting bombers into France, he vowed that no matter what, he'd see her again.
Chapter 22 May 1942. Charlotte was very proud of Ruby, but it wasn't as if she could say that. 13-year-olds didn't go around telling adults that they were proud of them. It sounded condescending. Though Maman and Papa had some idea of what had happened in Ruby's apartment, how could they not after Maman's fall? They didn't know that the situation was ongoing. Charlotte spent far too much time watching through the peephole as strange men arrived at night and left a day or two later, but she made a habit of distracting her parents if they ever appeared ready to go out into the hall when it was occupied by Ruby's visitors. It wasn't that Charlotte thought she couldn't trust her parents. It was that she didn't want one more thing weighing on them. They were already drowning in their worries. Papa seemed to grow more frantic by the day, racing out to secret meetings with other men from their synagogue. Charlotte couldn't decide whether he was taking the Nazi threat seriously or burying his head in the sand. He continuously swore to her that mass deportations couldn't possibly happen here, not to them.
"Even in the East, the word is that they are taking away only the riffraff, not the productive members of society. I'm still working, Charlotte. We are contributing. Everything will be okay."
But she didn't believe him. And what was more, she knew Mama didn't either. Once strong and solid, Mama had become something different since the war started, and that was even more troubling to Charlotte than her father's increased anxiety. While Papa seemed constantly wound up, her mother was wasting away. She was always sick with worry and malnutrition, and whenever Charlotte tried to comfort her, Mama's eyes would fog over.
"It'll all be okay, dear,"
Maman repeated over and over, a broken record. They were treating Charlotte like a child, and she was tired of it. Couldn't they see that she was just as concerned as they were? That their soothing words felt flimsy? If only she could do something brave to help out in the war effort, the way Ruby was. Then her parents would have to take her seriously. Instead, she was mostly confined to the apartment, a prisoner to her parents' fears that she could be picked up off the street and taken away without them knowing. Mama had given up on Charlotte's lessons, too. Her only link to the outside world were occasional trips out with Papa, the books in their apartment, and her weekly English lesson with Ruby. And then, In the final days of May 1942, everything became worse. The order came down that all Jews in France were obligated to wear a yellow star on the left side of their coats. They had just a few days to pick up the cotton insignias from their local police stations, and by the second week of June, there would be stiff penalties for those caught on the streets without them. Papa retrieved the stars for the family, and Mama dutifully sewed them onto the coats and sweaters they wore most frequently.
"It's just a Star of David," Papa said, his tone strangely flat. "Nothing to be ashamed of. After all, we are proud to be Jewish."
"But people will laugh at us," Charlotte said softly, slipping into her own coat with the hateful yellow blemish.
"Those who treat us poorly because of the star are the same ones who have hated us all along."
Papa didn't meet her gaze.
"Just hold your red eye."
But Charlotte could see the pain in Papa's face, and she knew that the new law was wounding him as much as it was wounding her. The first time she wore the star during a walk with Papa, a bearded man spat on her, his saliva landing on her right cheek. She blinked back tears and refrained from reacting until she'd turned the corner out of his sight. A group of teenage boys yelled from a doorstep, calling her a dirty Jew, and a German soldier sneered at her with such a look of disgust that she had to stop herself from physically recoiling. By the time she and Papa made it back inside their own building, she was shaking.
"It's not fair," she murmured, trying to stop crying.
Papa embraced her quickly and went into the apartment ahead of her, his face dark with worry, telling her to take all the time she needed to settle herself, but that she mustn't upset Maman. She was still trying to calm down when Ruby's door opened.
"Charlotte?" Ruby asked, stepping into the hall.
"What is it?"
"It's the star,"
Charlotte managed, and despite her best intentions, she began to sob harder. Ruby pulled Charlotte into her arms.
"What's happened?"
"I don't understand why people hate us so much."
"Why don't you come in for a little while? Let's talk about this."
"But you're busy," Charlotte pulled away. "I don't want to interrupt if you have a guest."
Ruby smiled. "The place is all ours today, Charlotte. Please, join me." Charlotte followed Ruby in, marveling at how different the apartment felt to her now, although it looked virtually the same as it always had. Most weeks, Ruby came to Charlotte's apartment for her English lesson, so Charlotte hadn't been here in a while. And while the decor had changed only minimally after Marcel's death, there was something about knowing that it was a haven for heroes that transformed everything. Ruby fetched them each a small cup of ersatz coffee, and Charlotte felt very adult as she stirred a lump of sugar into hers and took a sip.
"So tell me," Ruby said, sitting on the couch beside her, "are you different today than you were yesterday?"
Charlotte paused with her cup halfway to her mouth.
"Well, no."
"Well then, the only thing that has changed is what you're wearing. Am I correct?" Charlotte glanced down at the yellow star.
"Yes, but..."
"But nothing," Ruby interrupted firmly. "You should be proud of who you are, what you are. You don't think I stick out here every day because of my terrible French accent? I know people are mocking me." Charlotte allowed herself a tiny smile. Ruby's accent was pretty awful, though her vocabulary was nearly perfect.
"Yes," she said after a long pause. "But no one spits at you in the streets for being American."
Ruby put an arm around her and squeezed hard.
"Charlotte, you know as well as I do that it's what's inside a person that counts. And sometimes you have to walk through fire in order to find your true self. Maybe this is your fire."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean that sometimes we only discover our calling in life when things are darkest." Ruby grasped Charlotte's shoulders and looked into her eyes. "Use this experience to make you stronger." Charlotte stared at her lap for a long time as she thought about what Ruby was saying. She knew the advice was sound, but taking it was easier said than done. Finally, she looked up.
"I think it's bothering my father very much, too."
Ruby's expression softened. "That's very good of you to worry about him, Charlotte.
But your papa's a very religious man, isn't he?
Yes.
Then trust that he will find solace in that. That's one thing faith is especially good for, giving us strength in times of crisis.
How do you know?
Charlotte didn't mean to sound rude. You're not Jewish.
No, I'm Catholic, and in the end, Catholicism isn't really so different. Believing in God is at the core of our faith, just like yours. And as things have gotten more difficult for me, Charlotte, I've learned to pray harder. It's brought me comfort.
Oh, prayers are just words.
But they're words that remind us that there's something out there greater than ourselves.
And they're words that lead us to be the best versions of ourselves.
Charlotte looked at Ruby for a long time before nodding.
Okay.
Ruby pulled the girl into a hug.
Things are always darkest before the dawn, my friend.
I know.
But what Charlotte didn't say was that sometimes the dawn never came at all.
Chapter 23. July 1942.
The pilot who came to Ruby's door in mid-July, a 23-year-old American from Boston named Samuel Sullivan, arrived after the curfew, which Ruby knew was dangerous. The French police had been cracking down on violators, and if Samuel had been picked up near her apartment, he might very well have given her away. Ruby welcomed him anyhow, and made a mental note to speak with Aubert about it later. They'd taken to meeting every 2 weeks in the back of an abandoned dance studio on the Rue d'Estrées, and sometimes Lure would join them. Ruby had never asked her about the journey south with Thomas, because she knew the rules. They weren't to speak of the pilots after they'd departed. Ever. But she was still envious of the time the beautiful raven-haired guide had spent with the kind, charming pilot. Ruby had assumed at the beginning that she would forget about him as the months went on. But he was still the first thing on her mind each day when she awoke.
"Something's going on out there tonight, you know,"
Samuel said after Ruby had given him some bread, cheese, water, and fresh clothes.
"What do you mean?"
He shook his head.
"I'm not sure, honestly, but there's a lot of police activity on the streets. You don't think they're gearing up for a raid, do you?"
Ruby felt a ripple of fear.
"Where were they? Only in this neighborhood?"
"No, miss. It's what took me so long. There were police out all across Paris tonight."
"German?"
"French, I think."
"Hmm."
What Samuel was describing sounded unusual. After all, the French police rarely did things on their own. They were the Germans' puppets. If they were out in force, there was no question that the Germans were behind it. But was Samuel exaggerating? Ruby didn't know him at all, so it was impossible to tell.
"I'm sure things are fine," she said after a long pause. "None of them spotted you, did they?"
"No. I was very careful."
"Good. Now let's get you settled for the night, shall we? I'll come get you in the morning once the building is quiet, and we can talk about the next step."
"It's very kind of you to help me."
"It's not kindness. It's my duty."
It had become her line lately, and she meant it. She really wasn't doing anything extraordinary. In fact, if anything, she feared her role on the line was selfish, for it filled her days, so she didn't have time to worry about whether Thomas was still alive.
Nor did she have time to wonder why she cared so much.
She stepped outside her front door, listening to the silence of the building. When she was sure the coast was clear, she hurried Samuel into the hall closet, which she had filled with freshly laundered blankets just that afternoon. He'd be comfortable there for the night. After she'd gotten him settled, she went down the stairs and opened the door to the outside. But all was quiet. She could hear trucks clattering by in the distance. But on the Rue Amélie, things were peaceful. A quick look to both ends of the shadow-cloaked street confirmed only the usual traffic. Still, Ruby went to bed just past midnight feeling unsettled. She tossed and turned for a long while before sleep came, and she had just drifted off when a rumbling sound jolted her awake. She grabbed her watch from the nightstand as she flicked on a light. It was 4:25 in the morning, and something was going on outside. She crept into the hall outside her apartment
and peered out the building's large front window, which was visible from the landing. The street was filled with two police lorries and a small transport bus, already teeming with people. Four French policemen were entering the building just across the way, illuminated by the headlights of the lorries, and soon two others emerged from the building next door, escorting a family of four, all of whom wore yellow stars on their overcoats. The mother and father looked sleep-tousled and worried. The children, two girls who couldn't have been more than 3 and 5, were crying. A moment later, the first policeman she'd seen emerged from the building across the way with a sobbing mother and 3 young children. One of the policemen was screaming something at the woman, and she was shaking her head vigorously. This family, too, had yellow stars on their overcoats, which they were wearing on top of their pajamas. Ruby stifled a gasp as the policeman slapped the woman hard across her face, snapping her neck back. She quieted down after that, her cries now muffled sobs. She and her children were quickly shepherded onto the waiting bus, their suitcases shoved into the police lorry. Ruby had seen enough. She turned and ran to the Dachet's apartment, where she pounded hard on the door. "Wake up, Monsieur Dachet! Madame Dachet! Charlotte! It's an emergency!" The seconds ticked by, and Ruby knocked more insistently, knowing that she was probably waking half the building in the process. She prayed that people would stay in their apartments, and the hidden pilot would have the good sense to remain quiet. Finally, Monsieur Dachet came to the door clutching a poker. His expression softened when he saw that it was Ruby.
"Madame Benoit," he said, "what is it?"
"The police are rounding up Jews," she said quickly. "They're just outside. You must get out." She expected him to alert his wife, to grab the family's things quickly, to flee. But instead, he shook his head.
"No, no, that's impossible, Madame Benoit."
"Monsieur Dachet, I just watched 2 families, including children, dragged from their homes and loaded onto buses."
"They must be foreigners," Monsieur Dachet said, although his face had paled. "Not good French citizens like my wife and me?"
"I have no idea, but is that a chance you want to take? Besides, you were born elsewhere, weren't you?" He looked surprised.
"Yes, but—"
He was interrupted by Madame Dachet appearing in the hall behind him, her face white. She looked younger without her makeup, more vulnerable than Ruby had ever seen her.
"Ruven, do you really believe that they will leave us alone simply because you used to run a successful business?"
She glanced at Ruby, her eyes wide and mournful, before looking back at her husband.
"Madame Benoit is right. We are better safe than sorry."
"But, Sarah, surely you don't think—"
"Ruven,"
Madame Dachet cut him off,
"now is not the time for your pride to get in the way."
"But they're rounding up stateless Jews, Sarah. They must be."
"You don't think they consider us that? The Nazis don't care about your contributions to the French economy. They want to see us all removed."
There was a moment of tense silence.
"No,"
Monsieur Dachet firmly said, his tone resolute.
"I won't be driven from my home."
"But—" Madame Dachet began.
"No,"
he said firmly. "Papa?" Charlotte said, emerging from behind her mother. She was wearing a pink nightgown, and her hair was plaited. She looked scared.
"I think it's true, what Ruby is saying. I told you the butcher had heard rumors, and I—"
"And I told you that rumors are hardly ever true. You can't believe everything you hear, my dear. We'll be fine. If the police come here, we'll simply explain that—"
"Stop, Ruven,"
Madame Dachet said sharply, stepping forward.
"I'm not willing to take this risk with Charlotte."
She turned to Ruby.
"Will you take her? Protect our baby. If nothing happens tonight, she will come back in the morning."
"But, Mama—"
Madame Dachet grasped Ruby's hand, her eyes full of tears.
"Please, Madame Benoit. I know you are brave and strong, and I know you care for Charlotte. Can you keep her if the Germans come for us? Just until we are able to get back safely."
"Of course."
"No, Mama," Charlotte tried again. "If they come, I will go with you."
"No, darling, you won't.
Madame Daché took her daughter's hands.
Now, there isn't much time, and you mustn't argue. You must be strong, Charlotte, and you must be brave. Don't be afraid to be who you are. Promise you'll never forget us.
But, Maman!
Charlotte was sobbing now, but Madame Daché kissed her on the forehead and backed away.
You must go before it's too late.
Madame Daché looked at Ruby with tears coursing down her cheeks and mouthed,
Thank you,
before turning back to Monsieur Daché.
Say goodbye to Charlotte, Reuven.
He knelt before his daughter.
Your mother is overreacting, dear. If the police come for us, it's just a misunderstanding that we'll have cleared up soon. But in the meantime, be good for Madame Benoit.
We must go. Ruby felt as if her heart were shattering as she took Charlotte's hand and pulled the girl away. Before the police arrive. She paused at the doorway and turned back to Monsieur Daché once more.
You are sure you don't want to try to get away while there's still time? I could hide you too.
He met her gaze and smiled.
This is France, Madame Benoit. We are French citizens. I feel very certain we will see you in the morning.
Ruby knew that there wasn't enough time to change Monsieur Daché's mind, so she nodded at him, locked eyes with Madame Daché for a few awful seconds, and led a sobbing Charlotte down the hall and into her own apartment.
You must climb into the wardrobe, sweetheart, she said quickly, as soon as she had shut and locked the door behind her.
No, Charlotte said, beginning to cry harder. Maybe I can convince my parents to leave.
There's no time, honey.
But what if they're taken away?
Then we hope and pray that your father is right, Ruby said, wiping away Charlotte's tears.
But you don't believe he is, do you?
Ruby didn't know how to reply. Being honest with Charlotte would only make the girl feel worse, but she didn't want to lie to her either. She settled for saying gently, Perhaps the police won't come for your parents at all. But just to be on the safe side, Charlotte, let's get you hidden. You mustn't make a sound, no matter what. Understand? Ruby pulled the girl into a tight hug and then took her hand and led her quickly into the bedroom, where she arranged some blankets on the floor of the wardrobe in which she'd once hidden Thomas.
I'll come get you as soon as I'm sure the police are gone, she promised.
Charlotte nodded, and Ruby quickly closed the wardrobe. No sooner had she done so than she heard noises in the hall. She made her way to her door as quietly as possible and peered out the peephole, terrified for both her hidden pilot and Charlotte's parents. The police were here, just as Ruby had feared. There were four of them, the same four who had dragged the woman and her children from the building across the way, and they made a beeline for the Daché's door, knocking loudly. After a moment, Monsieur Daché answered, already dressed in crisp gray slacks, a button-down shirt and suspenders. He looked like he was headed out for a business meeting.
We are here for Reuven Daché and his family, one of the policemen, the one who had slapped the crying woman across the street, said.
I am Reuven Daché.
His voice was shaky but strong.
But there is some mistake. I am a French citizen, a war veteran. I am a furrier. I have many ties to the community, and I...
You will come with us. I'm sure if there is a mistake, it will be sorted out in the morning.
The police officer consulted the papers in his hands. Your wife, Sarah, and your daughter, Charlotte, must also come. Ruby could feel herself shudder. This was no ordinary arrest if they had children on their list. She could see the same realization cross Monsieur Daché's face.
My wife. I will get her.
His voice was trembling now.
But Charlotte, our daughter, is with friends in Aubergenville.
The policeman smirked at him.
You expect us to believe that?
You can come in and search all you like, but she is not here.
Monsieur Daché cleared his throat and added,
Besides, she was born here in France. She is as French as anyone else in this building. And yet, you and your wife are not. You are born in...
The policeman consulted his list again. Poland.
I've lived here nearly all my life, as my wife.
The policeman laughed.
And you think that makes you French, like us?
He didn't wait for an answer before shoving past Monsieur Daché.
We will find where your daughter is hiding.
Monsieur Daché stood rigid in the doorway as two other officers followed the first into the apartment. The fourth policeman stayed outside, looking uncomfortable. Ruby watched him as he glanced between Monsieur Daché's white face and the floor several times. She prayed the pilot, who was hidden just a few feet away, wouldn't make a sound. She had the feeling that this particular officer was distressed to be a part of these roundups, but that didn't mean he wouldn't do his job if it came down to it. After a moment, Monsieur Daché turned and went into the apartment, and Ruby could hear him saying something. He emerged a few minutes later, clutching Madame Daché's hand. Each of them held a suitcase, as the four policemen escorted them out of the building. Neither of the Dachés looked back, and Ruby knew it must have been tearing Madame Daché apart to leave Charlotte behind. Ruby wished she had said more to reassure the Dachés that she would protect their daughter with her life. But there simply hadn't been time. Ruby waited until the policemen were long gone before she slipped into the hall outside the apartment. She said a silent prayer of thanks that the pilot hadn't been discovered, and then she moved to the front windows of the building and looked out. The street outside was deserted again. If she hadn't witnessed it herself, she never would have known anything had happened here at all. She took a deep breath. She had to get a hold of herself before going back inside and facing Charlotte. She'd do that before tending to the pilot, because the girl was probably beside herself by now. A few minutes later, she opened the door to the wardrobe to find Charlotte staring at her. "What's happened?" the girl asked, her voice flat. "The police took them away." Ruby was trying to sound as unconcerned as possible, although her insides were screaming.
"Well, we have to go after them."
"Honey, we can't. They had you on their list, too. There's no way I'd risk anything happening to you. Your parents told them you were in Aubergenville, and they must have believed it."
"But we have to do something."
"I'm certain things will be sorted out in a few days," Ruby said, trying to project a confidence she didn't feel. "Surely there's been a mistake. In the meantime, let's get you out of this wardrobe, shall we?" Charlotte's hand was ice cold as she slipped it into Ruby's. Ruby could feel the girl shaking as she led her to the sofa in the living room.
"Papa is so sure that being French will save him," Charlotte said softly once she sat down.
"Yes.
But there is no French anymore, Ruby. There are just Jews. Those who hate us. And people who are too scared for their own lives to fight back."
"But there are also people like you and me, Charlotte. People who are doing what they can to help. We'll win in the end."
"It will be too late for my parents by then."
"No," Ruby said firmly. "When morning comes, I'll see what I can find out, all right? I don't know what these raids were about, but your parents must have been included by mistake. I'll fix this." Charlotte shook her head.
"But what if you can't, Ruby? What if you can't?"
Chapter 24. July 1942. It took Ruby more than an hour to get Charlotte settled down, but finally the girl fell asleep on the couch. Just before dawn, Ruby slipped into the hallway and rapped lightly on the door to the hidden closet.
"It's Fleur," she whispered. "You can come out."
She slid the panel back to find Samuel crouched in the crawl space, clutching a knife. "What in God's name was that?" he demanded. "Those voices in the hall. I was right, wasn't I? Something terrible has happened." Ruby put a hand on his arm.
"It was a raid," she said calmly, "to take Jews away." And then somehow, she was crying, and she couldn't stop.
The pilot quietly climbed out and wrapped his arms around her.
"It's okay," he murmured. "It's all going to be okay."
His words of comfort just made her cry harder, because he didn't really understand. He only knew the war from the sky. "We need to get into my apartment before someone sees you," Ruby said, drying her tears and suddenly realizing how stupid it was to be embracing a fugitive in plain sight. She suspected that the building's residents were still battened down for the night, but she couldn't take that chance.
We need to be quiet, because Charlotte is finally asleep, she added in a whisper as she opened her front door.
Charlotte?
The daughter of the couple next door who were taken away.
Dear God,
Samuel murmured, glancing at the girl asleep on the couch, as Ruby ushered him inside, shut the door quietly, and locked it behind them. Ruby gestured for him to follow her to the bedroom, and once they were inside, she left the door ajar and sat down on the edge of the bed, indicating that he should join her.
What happened? Samuel asked.
To the girl's parents. Ruby recounted the events of the past several hours, explaining that Madame Daché had asked her to keep Charlotte safe. Charlotte's father is convinced that they'll be returning soon, but I fear he's wrong.
But what could the police possibly be doing with the Jews?
Ruby shook her head. I only know the rumors of what's happening in Eastern Europe. They're putting Jews in camps. There are rumors that they're putting some to death.
Jesus Christ.
Samuel crossed himself and looked heavenward.
So, what are you going to do about the girl?
Ruby was silent for a moment. She'd been thinking about it all night. I don't think she's safe here. What if the police come for her again?
Samuel nodded slowly. What if I take her with me? To the Pyrenees. I could help her get out of the country.
Ruby could feel her eyes filling with tears. Samuel, that's a very kind offer. But that's not what the line is designed for, and I'm afraid it would put all of you, especially Charlotte, in danger.
It's perilous enough for grown men. She's just a girl.
I'm not just a girl.
Charlotte's voice from the doorway interrupted them, startling Ruby.
Charlotte!
Ruby jumped up from the bed. I thought you were asleep. Charlotte glanced at Samuel and then back at Ruby.
I'm not just a girl, she repeated. I want to do something. And I'm not leaving France.
Ruby could feel her chest tightening. How much of that did you hear?
Enough.
Ruby prayed she hadn't heard her repeat the rumors of putting Jews to death. Besides, there was no reason to think that would happen to Charlotte's parents. Surely the French police wouldn't be complicit in doing that to their own people.
Charlotte, we need to do everything we can to keep you safe.
Charlotte shook her head.
This is my country, too. I want to help. I want to do something, just like you are. Saving these pilots has given you a life back. It's made you feel that you are making a difference. I want to make a difference, too. I want to make sure Mama and Papa come home safely.
And they will. Ruby regretted the words as soon as she'd said them, because it wasn't a promise she could keep.
It was all out of her hands.
But Charlotte, I won't put you in harm's way. You're a child. Charlotte stared at her, and in the silence, Ruby heard the words the girl hadn't spoken. She wasn't a child anymore. She hadn't been for a long time. The war had changed them all.
I need to know what's happened to them, Charlotte said at last.
I will see what I can find out, but for now, you must get some rest. All of us must. If we're going to fight, we need to keep our strength. Ruby glanced at Samuel. You can return to the closet in the hall if you'd like, but I don't think the police are coming back tonight. Why don't you take the couch? You can hide in the wardrobe if anyone comes. And Charlotte, why don't you sleep here with me? Ruby gestured to the other side of her bed. We'll figure everything out in a few hours. Just past 10 in the morning, Ruby left the apartment to find Aubert, who would surely know what was going on. Samuel had promised he'd stay to protect Charlotte.
I'll be fine alone, Charlotte had protested, but he'd been unwavering.
This is what the war is about, he'd said solemnly in English.
Charlotte's eyes had filled with tears as Ruby translated the words for her.
I'm here to fight for you and your parents. I'll keep you safe. I swear it on my life.
The streets were eerily quiet, save for the police lorries and buses that rumbled by every few minutes. Ruby felt sick as she looked at the faces of the people staring out from the bus windows. There were at least as many women and children as there were men, and they all looked terrified. It seemed that the roundups were continuing, and that most people had stayed inside their apartments to avoid it all. Ruby felt conspicuous as she hurried along, head down toward the dance studio.
You shouldn't have come.
Aubert's face was drawn and pale as he answered the studio door after 5 minutes of Ruby's insistent pounding.
If you'd been followed.
I wasn't followed. They're too busy arresting innocent Jews to pay attention to me.
Quickly, come inside.
Aubert put a hand on her arm and led her into the back room. She was surprised to find Laure already standing there.
Hello, Fleur, Laure said,
kissing Ruby on both cheeks. Ruby reciprocated stiffly.
Laure here was just telling me what she's been able to find out about the roundups, Aubert said,
taking a seat and gesturing for Ruby to sit down too.
Laure nodded, and Ruby realized the other woman looked rattled.
She'd never seen Laure in anything less than total control.
The roundups aren't over, Laure said solemnly. They are continuing through many parts of the city. Although, thank God, many people have gotten word now and have gone into hiding. So, there will be at least a few saved.
Saved from what? Ruby asked, afraid to know the answer.
Word is they are being sent out of the country from Drancy.
Drancy? Ruby knew the place only as a suburb of Paris.
It's the location of a new internment camp, Aubert explained. The French police control it, and people are shipped east by rail from there.
To Germany and Poland. To work camps, Laure glanced at Aubert. And death camps.
No, Ruby's reply was instant. The French police wouldn't do that. They couldn't.
Laure sighed. Don't be naive. It's happening. You saw it with your own eyes last night, didn't you? That's why you're here.
Yes, but they're taking children. They couldn't possibly be sending them east to work. Ruby felt nauseated as she heard the truth in her own words. They were being sent east to die.
Laure and Aubert exchanged looks, but neither of them said anything for a long while.
It's why the things we are doing are so important.
It was Aubert who finally broke the silence.
We have to put a stop to this, and helping the Allies is the best way we know how.
My neighbors were taken, Ruby said softly. The Duchesse.
Foreign-born Jews? Laure asked.
Ruby nodded. The parents are from Poland, but they've been French for years. The husband fought in the Great War, for goodness sake.
That might help them, Laure said. I understand they are not deporting veterans for now.
I'm sorry, Aubert interrupted. Did you say your neighbors were taken?
Ruby nodded. They live just next door.
So, the French police have been in your building, but you have a pilot staying with you at the moment, don't you?
Yes, but he remained well hidden. I think we're all right.
Aubert rubbed his temples. It's impossible to know for sure.
The three of them were silent for a moment.
I took their daughter in, Ruby blurted out.
Aubert and Laure both snapped their heads up to stare at her.
You? What?
Aubert asked. The Duchesse's daughter, Charlotte. I've been tutoring her in English. She's 13. She has become like a sister to me. When her parents heard that the police were on their way, they asked me to take her.
Aubert gaped at her. What have you done? You could be jeopardizing the line.
No, I don't think they'll come back for her.
You can't know that. Aubert's face was turning red. You've put us all at risk.
No. She did what was right, Laure cut in,
surprising Ruby.
That's what our mission is, protecting innocent people from falling into the hands of the Germans. Who is more innocent than a child? Now we must decide how to proceed.
Is there any way to find out where Charlotte's parents have gone? Ruby ventured. Maybe we can get them out.
They are almost certainly in the Veldiv right now, Laure said.
The cycling stadium? Ruby asked. In the 15th?
Aubert cleared his throat. It has apparently been rented by the French police as a sort of holding site.
But for how many people? Ruby asked. It's not that large. She'd been there only once for a boxing match with Marcel, just after they'd moved to Paris. She'd found it stuffy and outdated.
There are rumors, Laure said slowly, that the French police have a list of nearly 30,000 Jews.
30,000?
Not that we believe they've rounded up nearly that many, Laure hurried to say, but even if the number is half that, it's quite a lot of people.
They can't possibly keep them all in the stadium, Ruby protested. They'd have to stand on top of each other.
And you think that would bother the Germans?
Aubert asked. I'd go later today and see what I can find out, Nor said, her tone soothing. I will ask around about Charlotte's parents, too. The Duchesse, you say?
Yes, Reuven and Sarah. This won't put them in more danger?
I'll be very discreet, I promise.
Thank you.
Ruby turned to Aubert. Perhaps I should stop taking pilots for now. I mustn't do anything to put Charlotte in danger.
No, his reply was instant. Please, you're too important to the line.
I thought I was useless. Isn't that what you said? That you didn't need me?
Ruby could see Laure hiding a smile, and she had the feeling it was an expression of solidarity. Perhaps Aubert had behaved the same way toward her at first.
Yes. Well, I was mistaken, he said crisply. Please, you must continue to help.
But I also must keep Charlotte safe, Ruby said. That has to be my priority now. I could help save 1,000 pilots, but if I let the Germans come take a little girl I've promised to protect, I could never forgive myself.
Aubert stared at her for a moment.
If our parents aren't returned in the next few days, we'll forge some identity papers for her. It will help.
How?
We forge them for the pilots all the time. We'll invent a cousin of Marcel's in Brittany. This girl will be their daughter. You can tell people her parents have died, and you have adopted her.
Will that actually work?
It's a plausible story, as long as she's bright enough to play along.
She's one of the smartest people I've ever met.
If our parents haven't returned by Sunday, I'll send someone with papers to your apartment.
Aubert paused.
In the meantime, you'll need to keep your current pilot for a few days more, until life returns to normal in Paris.
Normal? Ruby asked. I don't think any of us knows what that is anymore.
By the time Ruby had stood in line for rations and made her way home in the early evening, the streets were quiet again. It appeared that the roundups were over, but had the police managed to arrest most of the Jews they were after, or was this merely the quiet eye of the storm? Was Charlotte still in danger? And what would happen to the girl's parents? Ruby could still see Madame Daché's woeful, frightened expression as she said goodbye to her daughter. It was as if she knew it would be the last time.
I must stop being a pessimist, Ruby reminded herself as she walked down the Rue Amélie. Surely the Daches will be back soon.
But she'd been thinking all day about Laure's reports of the Veldiv. 10, 20, 30,000 people packed into the tiny stadium? It was horrific. And a government that would preside over that kind of inhumanity wasn't the type that would make exceptions for people who didn't really belong there. None of them belonged there, but that didn't seem to be stopping anyone. Ruby turned the key to her apartment door and entered quietly. She almost screamed when a large figure emerged from the shadows and rushed toward her.
Oh, it's just you,
Samuel said in his deep Boston-accented voice, as Ruby recoiled, clutching her chest.
Samuel, you scared the daylights out of me.
As Ruby's eyes adjusted to the darkness, she could see that he was holding the same knife he'd been clutching in the hall closet the night before.
I swore I would protect the girl, he said weakly. She's in the bedroom. She's been crying a lot today. I couldn't comfort her without knowing any French. I'm sorry.
I'm sure it helped just to know you were here.
Did you find out anything about her parents?
She shook her head and lowered her voice.
Nothing. But the news in general isn't good.
I was afraid of that.
He jerked his head toward the bedroom.
Why don't you go talk to her? I'll listen for anything suspicious in the hall. When you're done, I'll head back to the closet.
Ruby nodded.
Thank you.
No, thank you. If I'd been on the streets last night, I surely would have been rounded up too.
Tomorrow, Ruby would do more to find out what she could about Charlotte's parents. But for now, all she could do was try to bring a bit of comfort to a girl who was far too wise to be soothed by empty promises of a future Ruby couldn't guarantee.
Chapter 25. July 1942. By Sunday, Charlotte knew her parents wouldn't be coming home anytime soon. "They've already been sent to Drancy," Ruby told her gently that morning. "Lore has spoken with a few people who saw them just yesterday. They're in decent spirits, sweetheart." Charlotte nodded, trying hard not to cry. She wanted Ruby to confide things like this in her, and she was afraid that if she broke down, Ruby would revert to treating her like a child.
"Where will they go from Drancy?"
Ruby hesitated. "There's still a chance they'll be released, but I don't want to get your hopes up. Realistically, they may be headed east, to a work camp."
"A work camp,"
Charlotte repeated flatly. "Your parents are both healthy. It will be difficult for them, but there's every reason to expect that they'll be fine." But nothing was fine anymore, and Charlotte was certain Ruby knew that as well as she did. The world had changed overnight. When Ruby had explained the idea of drawing up false papers to identify her as Ruby's adopted daughter, Charlotte had begun to cry. Ruby had pulled the girl into her arms, explaining over and over again that it was only a ruse, that it was just to protect her until her parents came home, which would surely be soon. But Ruby had taken it wrong. That wasn't what Charlotte was crying about. She was sobbing because she knew it was a dire measure, one that Ruby wouldn't take, unless she truly believed Charlotte was here to stay. And there was a part of her that was crying because she knew how lucky she was to have found a home, even under such strange and terrible circumstances, with the bravest woman she'd ever known. "I won't be replacing your parents," Ruby had said firmly as she embraced Charlotte. "Not at all. I would never try to do that. But from now on, Charlotte, I hope you know I'm your family, too."
"But won't I be putting you at risk by staying?"
"No," Ruby's answer had been firm.
"What about the escape line? Can I help you with it now?"
"Absolutely not. I don't want you involved." "But no, Charlotte, it's too dangerous." Samuel had departed a day earlier, leaving just past dawn with Lure, and Ruby had left at noon for a meeting with some of the others on the escape line, leaving Charlotte at home by herself for the first time since the roundups. She was walking around the apartment in a daze, trying to imagine how this place could ever feel like home, when there was a knock at the door. She froze. What if it was the police? Then again, perhaps it was a pilot seeking refuge. Maybe she could prove to Ruby that she was capable of helping after all. She tiptoed across the room and peered through the peephole. She saw a boy around her age, maybe a year or two older, standing in the hall. He had black hair and wore ragged clothes, and despite the fact that his face looked young, he had the broad shoulders of a man a decade older. Charlotte took a step back, unsure of what to do. He didn't look like he could be working with the police, but he wasn't a pilot either. He appeared too young and too comfortable in his grimy outfit. She was about to turn away when he knocked again.
"I can hear you in there, you know," he said through the door.
His accent was most definitely French, and his voice was deeper than she'd expected.
"I mean you no harm. I have a delivery for Flore."
Ruby's code name. Charlotte knew that much from the eavesdropping she'd shamelessly done on her neighbor over the last several months. So was this boy a part of the escape line?
"Please, just let me deliver my package, and I'll be on my way," he said when she hadn't moved.
Charlotte still wasn't certain that it was the right thing to do, but she suddenly had a desperate urge to be face to face with this stranger. She took a deep breath and opened the door. For a moment, they just stared at each other. She could see the questions in his green eyes. He was wondering who she was and what she was doing here. But was he searching for something else in her face, too? She found that once she had locked gazes with him, she couldn't look away. He had the kind of eyes that looked too bright for his face. For any face, in fact.
"Good day," he said, breaking the silence. "I'm looking for Madame Flore."
"She's not here. But she's my cousin."
Charlotte could scarcely believe she'd just said that. It was part of her new cover, of course, but it felt like a betrayal of Mama and Papa.
"I can take a message, if you like."
The boy studied her, one corner of his mouth curling up slightly.
I see. Well then, please tell your cousin that I've delivered your papers. Forged them myself.
He held up an envelope. Charlotte's cheeks grew hot. He knew she'd just lied to him.
You forged them? She asked.
He shrugged.
It was nothing.
But how old are you?
Charlotte realized right away that it hadn't been a polite question.
15.
Oh.
She felt silly for asking and didn't know what to say next.
I learned to forge from my dad, he said finally. But he's dead now, so I had to take over. I'm pretty good. Take a look.
Charlotte took the envelope from him and slipped the papers out. She didn't know what birth certificates and adoption papers were supposed to look like, but these appeared very official, with stamps and seals and everything.
Nice work, she said, trying to sound like she knew what she was talking about.
His smile widened a bit.
Thank you.
Maybe I could help, too?
He looked confused.
You want to forge papers?
No, I mean, maybe, though I don't know that I'd be any good at it. But I want to do something. I'm tired of just watching things get worse and worse and not doing anything.
If Ruby wouldn't let her help, maybe this mysterious boy would. He studied her for a minute.
How old are you?
She drew herself up to her full height.
Nearly 14?
Are you brave?
Oh, yes.
She wanted to believe it was true. After all, she hadn't broken yet. The boy searched her face again.
Well, I suppose you could be useful. Let me talk to some of the people I work with. I'll be in touch.
Really?
She could scarcely believe it.
Why not?
He shrugged, then turned to go.
Wait, she called after him. You didn't tell me your name.
It's Lucien.
He held her gaze for a moment. The papers say you're named Elaine, but who are you, really? She hesitated.
Charlotte, but I'm not sure I'll ever be here again.
Charlotte's a beautiful name, but so is Elaine. Whoever you decide to be, I'm glad to know you. I'll see you again.
And then he was gone. Charlotte stared after him as he disappeared down the stairs of their building, confused by the way her heart was still pounding and the fact that her face felt like it was on fire. Chapter 26. July 1942. News of the massive roundups in Paris had reached England, and Thomas was worried. He knew how much Ruby cared for the girl who lived next door, and every time he closed his eyes, he imagined Ruby throwing herself between the child and the barrel of a Nazi soldier's gun. Ruby wouldn't let something happen to Charlotte without putting up a fight. But what did that mean? And what guarantee was there that either of them was still alive anyhow? He knew he should be worrying only about his own missions, but each spare minute somehow belonged to her. He had signed up for this fight, had even derived some enjoyment from his time in the cockpit. Ruby, on the other hand, hadn't asked for any of this. She'd fallen in love with the wrong person and had found herself in the middle of a war. He wondered if she had continued to harbor pilots after he'd gone, but no other pilots from his squadron had returned after being shot down, so there was no one to ask. Today, he was returning from a mission over eastern France after escorting a fleet of bombers. He let down his guard for a second, just as they passed Dunkirk, and thought about how Paris lay almost directly to the south, just over 150 miles away. It was a distance he could cover quickly in his Spitfire. What would happen if he made a 90-degree turn to the south and simply disappeared over the horizon? It was a nice fantasy, but of course he knew exactly how it would end. He'd get shot at as he approached Paris, and probably die in a fiery explosion in the sky. No, thank you. And so, he forced himself to refocus. He had to survive if there was to be any hope of seeing her again. And he wouldn't live through the war if he was daydreaming every time he flew over the continent. The cliffs of Dover came into view, white and gleaming, as Thomas made his way back across the channel,
and when he turned toward his home airfield, he tried hard to focus on what lay immediately